and welcome to the Love Meech Podcast. I'm your host, Meech. It is a billion podcasts to listen to, and the universe guided you right here to this one. So hello, welcome, welcome. There are 7.9 billion people in the world today, yet you met me, and this is not by happy chance. This is divine meeting, and may we guide each other well. Now, I am in this world, but I am not of it. On this podcast, you're going to hear topics about both the spiritual world as well as the earth world. My goal is to keep learning and evolving and spreading love. Hey, loves, and welcome to another episode of the Love Meech Podcast. We are going to continue with part four of Last Name Jackson and what does it mean. I wanted to just share with you guys that I joined tpministries.org. Please check it out, where Brother Yusuf, which is my spiritual advisor from YouTube, teaches you how to change your nationality from black to what it should be, which is American Indian Aboriginal. You use form SF-181. You update it with the Social Security Administration. I faxed everything over. I am good to go on everything now. I do American Indian. I am not black. When you look at the names like American, white, I mean black, white, da, 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 they all point back to a continent of where your native people originally came from. And surprisingly, white, it has Africa there. So you will see a lot of black people professing that they're white. Not that they're white in skin color or white with DNA, in their bloodline or, you know, in their family. But they're basically saying, based off of what you've given me, what white means, yes, I am from Africa, so white. I didn't want to go that route. I'm actually saddened by their culture and history, and I just don't want anything to do with it. But my people are American Indian Aboriginal, and I'm going to stick with that. So that's what I changed mine to. He goes over more instructions on how you can do that. He also talks about how you can get a world citizen ID, a world citizen passport, you know, etc. He was able to even fly through the airport with his world citizen card, not a passport or anything like that. So it does work, you guys. That's one of the next things that I plan on doing so that I can continue my journey on being a sovereign citizen. Okay, so enough of that. I have another podcast, so if you want more details, you can go back through my podcast to find the one where I talk about being Native American Cherokee Indian. So on this podcast, we are going to talk about Cherokee. So this is from Wikipedia. The Cherokee are one of the indigenous people of the southeastern woodlands of the United States. Prior to the 18th century, they were concentrated in their homelands and period. I'm glad they're being honest. In towns along the rivers, valleys, and what is now known as North Carolina, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama. Our people were smart enough to live by them lakes and streams. So I've heard that water is dead. The water that is pumped through these pipes and that gets to our house is dead. We're supposed to be drinking electric live water. As it's coming down the mountain speeding, let me tell you why it's electric. People that live off the grid, they have a windmill in the stream in the water, and it generates electricity. You guys, we are light beings. We are electric beings. When we eat an apple, if you take a picture of a magnetic picture of an apple, it shows you the light force energy in it. If you take a picture of meat and stuff, it's small. So that just shows us that although we're eating this stuff, we're only eating it to get to what? That light energy. I can sit in the sun all day. So I'm straight eating when I do that without consuming or, you know, using extra energy in my body just to break it down. I'm getting it straight from the source. But if I can sit in the sun all day, it does not bother me. So I hadn't got a little bright because we was in the winter. But watch, my color is going to start to change because I'll be sun tanning. So I just think it's interesting that they continue to give us this dead water and it's not alive. So there are some people that get glass bottles because glass is better than plastic on a molecular level. When you use plastic, I don't care if it's containers, bottles, whatever, you're drinking tiny, 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 tiny particles of plastic and your body does not know how to break down that foreign entity. Our body is a natural body and it only understands natural things all of these man-made things that we are introducing to our body is sending us to our graves, you guys. But anyways, so if you Google like streams and lakes, it'll show you different maps that you could go to. And I actually want to start doing that. I got to find me some glass gallon jugs so that I could go get live water. You can also do distilled water. There's some distilled machines on Amazon where you can actually distill your water. And that's where you boil it and then you collect the steam because it's purified. So let me keep going. He believes that the origin of the Iroquoian language was likely split between the northern and southern Iroquoian language more than 4,000 years ago. Of course, I think it was longer than that. Let's see. The Cherokee language for Cherokee people is Aniwaya. Okay. Which translates to principal people. So many theories, though all unproven, about the origin of Cherokee, it may have originally been derived from one of the competitive tribes in the area. For instance, the Choctaw people means the people who live in the mountains. Choctaw Chalaki, people from the mountains. The Choctaw Chulaakabi means the people who live in the cave. I like how they their names have meanings. The Cherokee did live among rivers and mountainous areas. Okay, so let's see here. Let me keep going. The Cherokee occupied numerous towns throughout the river valleys and mountain ridges of their homelands. I love that. Of their homelands. Thank you. What we call the lower towns were found in present day South Carolina, the Cooey River, called the Savannah River in the lower portion. You see how they changed all these names? That is not that river's name. That river name is not no Savannah. Savannah is not no native name. Let's see. The Native Americans cultivated plants such as marsh elder, desmaya elderberry, lamb squatter, pigweed, sunflower, squash. People created new art forms such as shell gourds. They adopted new technologies and developed an elaborate cycle of religious ceremonies. Let's see. Let me keep going. History. I don't understand how they even trying to tell someone else's history. This is wild. The Cherokee, this is interesting. The Cherokee are of middle stature. How they try to label people of an olive color, though generally painted, their skin stained with gunpowder, picked into it in very pretty figures. The hair of their head is shaved, though many of the old people have it plucked out by the roots, except a patch of hinder part of their head. About twice the bigness of the crown piece, which is ornamented with beads, feathers, stained deer hair, and such like baubles. The ears are slit and stretched to an enormous size, putting the person who undergoes the operation to incredible pain, being unable to lie on either side for nearly 40 days. To remedy this, they generally slit but one at a time. As soon as the patient can bear it, the wound round with wire to expand them, and are adorned with silver pendants and rings, which they likewise wear at their nose. The custom does not belong originally to the Cherokee, but taken by them from the Shawnee or northern nations. They that can afford to wear a collar, swamp, which are beads cut out of clam shells, a silver breastplate, breasts on their arm and wrist, small metal, a bit of cloth to cover their private part. That's what I'm talking about. I'm from the hippie genre. Like, what is these clothes? a shirt of the English make, a sort of cloth booth, moccasins, which are shoes of a make particular to the American, ornamented with porcupine quills, a large mantle or match coat thrown over all, complete their dress at home. Okay, let's see. I'm not gonna read this war stuff. Definitely gonna skip over that. They got so much history about these people. Okay, culture. The Quala Arts and Crafts Mutual, Inc. of Cherokee, North Carolina, is the oldest continuing Native American art cooperative. They were founded in 1946 to provide a venue for traditional Eastern Band Cherokee artists. That's really nice. Between the 19th century, polygamy was common among the Cherokee, especially the elite men. The matrial culture meant that women controlled property, such as their dwellings, and their children were considered born into the mother's clan, where they gained heredity status. Advancements to leadership positions were generally subject to approval by the women elders. In addition, to society was matrifocal. Customarily, a married couple lived with or near the woman's family so she could be aided by her female relatives. Her oldest brother was a more important mentor to her sons than was their father, who belonged to another clan. Traditionally, couples, particularly women, could divorce freely. So we see how this is so different from American society. It was unusual for Cherokee men to marry a European American woman. The children of such a union were disadvantaged, as they would not belong to the nation. They would be born outside the clans, and traditionally were not considered Cherokee citizens. This is because of the matrial aspect of Cherokee culture. As the Cherokee began to adapt some elements of European American culture in the 19th century, they sent elite young men to American schools for education. In the late 19th century, the U.S. government put new restrictions on marriage between a Cherokee and non-Cherokee. Sounds familiar. Although it was still relatively common, a European American man could legally marry a Cherokee woman by petitioning the court after gaining the approval of 10 of her blood relatives. Once married, the man had a status as an intermarried white, a member of the Cherokee tribe with restricted rights. For instance, he could not hold any tribal office. He remained a citizen of the under the laws of the United States. Common law marriages were more popular, such as intermarried whites. They were listed in separate category on the registers of droits rolls, prepared for allotment of plots of land to the individual households, members of the tribe. In the early 18th century, federal policy of assimilation of the Native Americans meant, okay, gender roles. Men and women have historically played important, yet at times different roles in Cherokee society. Historically, women have primarily been the head of the household, owning the home and the land, farmers of the family's land, and mothers of the clans. As in many Native American cultures, Cherokee women are honored as life givers. They are honored, y'all. Cherokee women are honored as life givers, as givers and nurturers of life via childbirth and the growing of plants, and community leaders as clan mothers. Women are traditionally community leaders in Cherokee communities. Some have served as warriors, both historically and in contemporary culture and military service. Cherokee women are regarded as traditional keepers and responsible for cultural preservation. Now, this is interesting. While there is a record of a non-Native traveler in 1825 noticing what he considered to be men who assumed the dress and performed the duties of women, there is a lack of evidence of what would be considered two-spirit individuals in Cherokee society, as is generally the case in matriarchal and matronial cultures. So two-spirits is, or rainbow soul, what they will call, there's so many got their names. A person that doesn't want to say I'm all men or all women, but they are equally balanced in their feminine and masculine energy. I guess the best way I could say it. So spirit has been getting on me about I can say things, but you have to be very careful with how you say things. Like, I saw a mirror and it was so ugly. And you can only change yourself, right? People have to learn their own lessons. So what I took from it was, that is not pretty. You know, I don't want to be like that. Let me be very, you know, not to say that what I'm saying is wrong or indifferent or anything like that, but let me just watch how I say stuff, because words have power, you know what I mean? And I think we are held accountable to what we say just as much as what we do, not whether it's true or not. But yeah, so I just want to make sure I say things in the most polite way. Okay, so slavery, let's see here. Slavery was a component of Cherokee society prior to European colonization, as the frequently enslaved enemy captives taken during times of conflict with other indigenous tribes. By their oral tradition, the Cherokee viewed slavery as a result of an individual's failure in warfare and as temporary status pending release or the slave's adoption into the tribe. So this is what was different between native slavery and American slavery. They said the individual's failure in warfare, okay, so as prisoner of war, right, and as a temporary status, meaning it wasn't indefinite, and then also pending release or the slave's adoption into the tribe. So obviously you could prove yourself and become a member of the tribe after y'all done went to war. Like, how honorable and noble is that? So let's see. So this is sad. As the Cherokee began to adopt some European American customs, they began to purchase enslaved African Americans to serve as workers on their farms or plantations, which some of the elite families had in the antebellum years. When the Cherokee were forcibly removed on the Trail of Tears, they took slaves with them and acquired others in Indian territory. So I'm glad we talked about antebellum. Let me just pause right there. So everybody had slaves. Slave is not new. Prisoners of war, you know, I think slavery kind of changed. Indentured servant was like a slave. You just, you know, worked like a peasant until your time was up. That's even in the Bible. Joseph worked for Sarah. Not Joseph. Somebody. Mary. Whoever. Not me. Was it Mary? I think so. Because she went to go see her cousin. But anyways, so let me go to antebellum real quick. Antebellum. In the history of the Southern United States, the antebellum period, which is Latin from antebellum, before the war, spanned the end of the War of 1812 to the start of the American Civil War in 1861. The antebellum South was characterized by the use of slavery and the culture it fostered. As the era proceeded, Southern intellectuals and leaders gradually shifted from portraying slavery as an embarrassing and temporary system to a full-on defense of slavery as a positive good, and harshly criticized by the budding abolitionist movement. Like, really? These people are sick in the head. So there was a movie called Antebellum. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It shows, because I was like, I'm not looking at almost slave movies, but it is modern. An African-American woman who's like speaking out against, you know, the injustice of African-Americans is kidnapped, and she is sent to a freaking plantation, like in, like today in 2023. Like, and sometimes when I'm driving and I'll see private property, don't enter, I just wonder to myself, like, could it be captured people there? You know what I mean? Is that where the missing kids are, and they telling us don't go because it's private land? Like, who is monitoring these private areas? Like, I feel like the government, the military should be knocking on our doors and patrolling and just making sure people are doing what they're supposed to do. Because she was literally in an area where they enact the war. Like, they really are pretending like this war is going on. But instead of pretending, they got real slaves and they raping them and putting them on shackles and they working. Like, bitch, this is some real fucking shit. And I don't think movies are just movies. So who escaped and sold the story to be put in a movie? And we like, oh, that was a good movie. No, bitch. These people is reenacting this shit today. And I'm going to tell you how I know I'm right. Airbnb has been under fire for renting out slave cabins. And now they're saying they will no longer do that. No, bitch. You wanted to do it and you collected that money. But because it's the news and you don't look good, now you don't want to do it. Like, that's what I can't stand. Like, if you don't want to do something, you don't do it. You don't not do it now that you done got caught. Oh. oh, let's not rent out the fucking slave cabins. Who would want to stay there? You better take some motherfucking pictures and move on. Like, what? Like, this was people's lives for over 400 years, and you want to stay there? I think not. You better go get a cabin like the Girl Scouts. So anyways, I just thought that was interesting. So let me come back. Fugitive slaves. So in the United States, fugitive slaves or runaway slaves were terms used in the 18th and 19th century to describe people who fled slavery. The term also refers to the Federal Fugitive Slave Acts of 1793 and 1850. Such people are also called freedom seekers, to avoid implying that the slave had committed a crime and that the slaveholder was the injured party. Period. Like, to me, there is no slave. You can't be born a slave. Everyone is born with their rights to be, you know, inalienable rights to be a human being on this planet. For one person to have power and authority to call someone else a slave is absurd to me. To put shackles on them, to force them to work for free, to have a law system, you know, supporting them, to have military and bounty hunters enforcing it. Like, this is the same, it's the same government that people vote for today. It's why I don't believe in voting, because it's the same system. Until they tear it all down and rebuild it, I don't want any parts of it. Let's see. Generally, they tried to reach states or territories where slavery was banned, including Canada, until 1821. Spanish Florida, shout out to Florida. Most slave laws tried to control slave travel by requiring them to carry official passes if traveling without a master. The passage of the Fugitive Slave Act in 1850 increased penalties against runaways and slaves who had aided them. Because of this, some freedom seekers left the United States altogether, period, traveling to Canada or Mexico. I keep telling y'all, Mexico is calling me. Approximately 100,000 American slaves escaped to freedom, and that's not nearly enough compared to all the ones that died, y'all. That's like so sad, but we here. We are ancestors. We are the seeds of our ancestors, and we are here thanks to them. Let's see. I don't want to read too much about this because I'm going to get upset. When the slaves were found missing, masters were outraged, many of them believing that slavery was good to the slave, and if they ran away, it was the work of northern abolitionists, with one arguing that they are indeed happy, and if let alone, they'll remain so. So to me, this is a sick person. How you can believe a lie and get others to believe it? Because let's be honest, to be a slave, you're happy, and if you're left alone, you remain so. Then how about you be a motherfucking slave? But since you're not, obviously this isn't true. Because if something was so good, you would be doing it and not enforcing someone else to do it. A new name was invented. Do you see that? A new name was invented. I'm glad they put that there. For the supposed mental illness of a slave that made him or her want to run away. Drapomania. They just been making up shit from the beginning of time. A mental illness because you know you free and you want to be free. That is not a mental illness, okay? The people that are administering these laws have a mental illness, okay? Flyers would be put up, advertisements placed in newspapers, rewards offered, and posties sent out to find him or her slave catchers. Under the new Fugitive Slave Act, they could now send federal marshals into the north to extract them. Girl, if I was free and somebody tried to drag me back home, oh, everybody died. The new law also brought bounty hunters into the business of returning slaves to their masters, which we call modern day police. I mean, it is what it is. A former slave could be brought back into the South to be sold back into slavery if he or she was without freedom papers. In 1851, there was a case of a black coffeehouse waiter who was kidnapped by federal marshals on behalf of John Debris, who claimed to be the man's enslaver. So you could just walk up to anybody and say, oh my God, that was my slave, with no freaking proof, and they're just going to drag you back. Like, that's messed up. Escaped slaves often faced harsh punishments after being captured, such as amputation of limbs, whippings, brandings, and hobblings. How they just put this in one little sentence is beyond me. Individuals who aided fugitive slaves were charged and punished under the law. In the case of Abelman and Booth, the latter was charged with aiding Joshua Glover's escape in Wisconsin by preventing the capture by the federal marshal. The Winston Supreme Court ruled that the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 was unconstitutional as it required states to violate their own laws in protecting slavery. Abelman versus Booth was appealed by the federal government to the U.S. Supreme Court, which upheld the constitution of the act. You know what? Underground Railroad. Let's keep going. Underground Railroad was a network of black and white abolitionists. Shout out to whoever you are with a kind soul that just understands wrong is wrong is right outside of race, because white people was hung too. White people lost their family too for doing what was right. That was like a spirit thing. You either got the spirit or you don't. Members of the Religious Society of Friends, such as the Quakers, African Methodist, Episcopal Church, Baptist Methodist. In 1786, George Washington complained the Quakers tried to free one of his slaves. In the early 1800s, Isaac T. Hopper, a Quaker from Pennsylvania, and a group of people of North Carolina established a network of stations in the local area. In 1831, when Trice David was captured going into Ohio from Kentucky, his owner blamed an Underground Railroad who helped him escape. 8 years later, while being tortured for his escape, this is insane, y'all. 8 years later. 8 years later, while being tortured for his escape, a man named Jim said that he was going north along the Underground Railroad to Boston. Now, I want to say here that I never hear nobody talk about this, though. And there are tunnels and cave systems underground and underwater. I ain't talking about the ones that we drive on, okay? So, when they say Underground Railroad, it's really underground, y'all. I don't care what nobody say. I don't care what nobody say. There's no way you can have a hollering baby, you know, dogs sniffing your trail and all, and be above ground. Fuck that. You underground in them goddamn dark ass tunnels with lights and stuff. You know, probably with other, maybe aliens or who knows, escaping. So I remember they was picking on Portia when she said the Underground Railroad one time. But I really believe that there's tunnels. There are tunnels. You can Google that right now. There are tunnels underground everywhere. And I believe they use those to get away. That's just what my spirit say. Let's see. The network extended the United States, including Spanish Florida, Indian Territory, and Western United States, and into Canada and Mexico. The Underground Railroad was an escape route that would assist fugitive enslaved African Americans in arriving in the northern states. However, with the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, as well as other laws aiding the southern states in the capture of runaway slaves, it became a mechanism to reach Canada. Canada was a safe haven for African American slaves because they had already abolished slavery by 1783. Blacks in Canada were also provided equal protection under the law. The well-known Underground Railroad conductor Harriet Tubman, yes, mama, is said to have led approximately 300 slaves to Canada. A lot more lies they tell. In some cases, freedom seekers immigrated to Europe and the Caribbean islands. That's why our people are everywhere, y'all. Let's see here. Okay, so that was the end of that. Let me get rid of that one. Okay, so Kingsland Plantation. Kingsland Plantation, also known as Zephaniah Kingsland Plantation Home and Buildings, is the site of a formal estate in Jacksonville, Florida that was named for its developer and most famous owner, Zephaniah Kingsley, who spent 25 years there. It is located at the northern tip of Fort George Island at Fort George Inland and is part of the Temecula Ecological and Historical Preserve managed by the U.S. National Park Service. Kingsley's house is the oldest plantation house still standing in Florida. And the solidity-built village of slave cabins is one of the best preserved in the United States. It is also the oldest surviving antebellum Spanish colonial plantation in the United States. The plantation originally occupied the entirety of Fort George Island, occupying 750 acres, more or less. Let's see. Kingsley Plantation was not Kingsley only or even his primary plantation. Wow. In 1836, he moved his entire family from Florida after it was acquired by the U.S. and Kingsley's free blacks were unwanted to a plantation called Mayoesco de Coya at the time in Haiti. But from the 1840s in the Dominican Republic, in contrast with the Kingsley Plantation, little remains of Magor de Coya. What? Let's see here. Fort George Island is located in Duval County, several miles northeast of downtown Jacksonville. It is surrounded by Little Talbot Island and the Nassau River. The North Atlantic coast of Florida has been inhabited for 12,000 years. When Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon landed near Cape Canaveral in 1513. Ownership of Florida transferred to the United Kingdom in 1763. Spanish settlers had established missions, including one at Fort George. In 1793, American Revolution veteran John Lightning McQueen was lured to Fort George Island from South Carolina by the Spanish government, which rewarded McQueen with the island. McQueen settled with 300 slaves and constructed a large house in a unique agriculture style, exhibiting four-corner pavilions surrounding a great room. McQueen was soon bankrupt due to his misfortune, and the position of the plantation was turned over to John McIntosh. Do you see this? So there is this meme going around where there an actor who always plays slave owners in movies, ironically, is being sued for reparations. And I put on there, okay, where's the line, period? Because I remember telling my sister a lot of CEOs were stepping down. And it just, I just could not understand, like, you know, you work so hard to climb the ladder and you just gonna, baby, you just gonna step down? What's going on? So one, I feel like they knew COVID was coming and, you know, probably didn't get the damn shot themselves, trying to tell everybody else to get it. But two, if these companies are finna be sued for reparations, like he is, not the company, but him personally, they gonna lose all their goddamn money. So McIntosh, y'all have heard that name before, McIntosh. So my whole argument is, yeah, slavery was done, you know, we are where we are now, but a lot of these companies are still existing, not because they were startup companies from today within equality, but they were startup companies from the injustices of slavery. And that money is how many years long? And I don't see no charities going around saying, you know, you are an ancestor of slaves. My family have bloody hands. Let me do some good stuff for the community. I don't see none of that going around. So just remember that, McIntosh. I bet they have blood money is what I call it. So let me see. Oh, look at this. Two of them. Okay, let me scroll. He purchased the land and buildings for $7,000 in 1817, equivalent to $118,752 today. Kingsley owned several plantations around the lower St. John's River and what is today Jacksonville and Daytona Island, Drayton Island, Central Florida. Two of them may have been managed part-time by his wife, a former slave named Anna Magadijai. Kingsley married Anna in 1806 when she was 13 years old. Ridiculous. Recently arrived in Cuba from West Africa. See? I have people from all over. He freed her in 1811 and charged her with running his Laurel Grove plantation at Doctor's Lake in modern-day Orange Park. His legal emancipation submitted to the Spanish colonial government read, "Let it be known that I possessed a slave, a black woman called Anna, around 18 years of age," which he lied. she was 13. Brought at a bazaar, newly imported African in the port of Havana from a slave cargo, who, with the permission of the government, was introduced here. The said black woman has given birth to 3 mulatto children, George, about 3 years, 9 months, Martha, 20 months, and Mary, 1 month. And regarding the good qualities shown by the said black woman, the nicely and fidelity which she has shown me, and for other reasons, I have resolved to set her free, and the same for her 3 children. It's a goddamn shame. That woman was born free. Marriage between white plantation owners and African women were common in East Florida. Spanish government provided for a separate class of free people of color and encouraged slaves to purchase their freedom. Slavery under Spain and Florida was not considered a lifelong condition. This is what I'm talking about. And free blacks were involved in the economic development of the region, many of them owning their own slaves. Anna oversaw 60 slaves at Fort George Island, which grew cotton, citrus, sugarcane, beans, potatoes. Now, I bet there's a difference between her being a slave owner and others. Like, if I have no choice but to be your slave owner, you're going to be a slave to them, but we family in here. You know what I mean? We're going to play the role. John Maxwell, the 4th child, was born in 1824 when Kingsley and Anna lived in Fort George Island. Kingsley also maintained relationships with 3 other African women who acted as co-wives or concubines. Flora, Musalina, and Sarah. Wow. Anna remained the matriarch in the polygamous family, I'm sure. Visitors to the plantation were invited to the dinner table, where Kingsley displayed his multiracial children with pride. He provided them with the best education he could offer and considered them a shield from any potential racial uprising. Wow. Now, my uncle is African-American and my aunt is full 100% American, and they have mulatto children or mixed children. And I would, you know, just like to be a fly on the wall to see, like, what is the experience of life as a half white person, half black person? Because you hear arguments on both sides. Do you feel torn? Do you side with your mother, your father? Do you just stick with the community that's in between? I'm pretty sure that is, like, interesting. Then the Florida Council passed laws that forbade interracial marriage and inheriting the property of the free blacks of mixed-race descendants to avoid difficulties with the new government, in which he termed its spirit of intolerant prejudice. Yeah, right. Let's see. Kingsley started a plantation in Haiti that was worked by former Fort George Island slaves who had become indentured servants. Slavery was not allowed in Haiti. They were to earn their freedom in 9 years. In 1842, Kingsley gave an interview to the abolitionist Lydia Child. When she asked him if he was aware that his occupation was a slave trader might be perceived as being akin to piracy, he responded, "Yes, and I am glad of it. They will look upon a slaveholder just so by and by. Slave trading was a very respectable business when I was young. The first merchants in England and America were engaged in it. Some people hide things which they think other people don't like. I never conceal anything." This is what came up to me when I just heard merchants. So the merchants of yesteryear were sea merchants bringing slaves, you know, wherever they need to go. Now we have merchants today, but they are trading products. Now, we have all heard stories where those cargoes are open and there's bodies in there. So, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, this shit is still going on. Okay, so let me, Let's see. He went on to exhibit considerable pride in his Haitian plantation, built with the help of his sons. I wish you would go there, Anna would give you the best in the house. You ought to go to see how happy the human race can be. It is a fine, rich valley, 30 miles from Port Platte, heavily timbered with mahogany all round, well-watered flowers so beautiful, fruits in abundance, so delicious that you cannot refrain from stopping to eat till you could eat no more. My sons have laid out good roads and built bridges and mills. The people are improving and everything is prosperous. Kingley died in the next year while en route to New York City to work on a land deal. Anna returned to Florida in 1846 to settle an inheritance dispute with some of her husband's white relatives. Because the will had been made under Spanish law, when inheritance by free blacks was legal, the court ruled in her favor and control of the Kingsley holdings in Florida remained with her and her children for several years. Kingsley Beatty Gibbs sold the Fort George Island plantation in 1852 and moved to St. Augustine. Esther Bartley, born a slave on the plantation, shown living on the ground in the early 20th century. Anna J. moved with about 70 former slaves to Arlington neighborhood of Jacksonville to live out her remaining years. The ownership of the island and farms immediately followed. Its sale by Gibbs is unknown, but after the American Civil War, the Freedmen's Bureau managed the island and recently emancipated freedom lived in the former slave quarters and farmed the land. That's interesting. I gotta see if I know any Gibbs. Okay, so let me see. Then the very last part, y'all, is the Seminole War. How was I supposed to pick up here before? Okay, Seminole War. First Seminole War, Second Seminole War, Third Seminole War. God darn. Man, I got Seminole blood in my veins, baby. Let's just talk about the third one. The Third Seminole War, 1855 to 1858. Southwest Florida led the increasing tension with Seminoles living in the area. In December 1855, U.S. Army personnel located and destroyed a large Seminole plantation west of the Everglades, perhaps to deliberately provoke a violent response that would result in the removal of the remaining Seminole citizens for that region. Jolata Miko, a similar leader known as Billy Bowlegs by the whites, responded with a raid near Fort Myers, leading to a series of retaliation raids and small skirmishes with no large battle fought. Once again, the United States military strategy was to target Seminole civilians by destroying their food supply. Hello, I don't know if y'all been hearing about the food supply, the same blueprint. By 1858, most of the remaining Seminoles, war-weary and facing starvation, acquiesced to being removed to the Indian Territory in exchange for promises of safe passage and cash payments. An estimated 200 to 500 Seminoles and small family bands still refused to leave and retreated deep into the Everglades and the Big Cypress Swamp to live on land considered unsuitable by American settlers. You know what? This will make anybody mad if you know that these are your people. So, I guess we was able to conclude with podcast number 4. If you go on Ancestry.com, I think you get a free trial. You will see that your heritage goes back further than you could ever imagine. I feel like a lot of the world is mixed now. And most of it was mixed, not because of love, but because of rape. So let's just talk about the origins, though. A lot of African Americans have either Native American, Indigenous American blood, African blood, or mixed. Because as we've heard through all 4 of these podcasts, the Natives were here. They traded with the Africans. They had African slaves. The African slaves were free. They married between the whites and the Indians. So it's like a mixture all there. But I hope what we got from all these podcasts was, number one, this was these people land. Number two, the government that we are under today will give you diseases, will destroy your food, will cause quarrel between you and your people, and will tell you to freaking leave and steal your shit. Period. And then here we are today, fast forward, although we know the history very well, no one has decided to go to court to rectify this wrong. No one wants to give the land back, give the money back, shut the companies down. It just kind of is what it is. And I think that is my, that is like the sore in my thorn. Like, a lot of these companies still exist today. You cannot pay me any amount of money to open up an account with Three Fifths Bank. Are you freaking, it's like they laughing in our face, like three fifths of a slave. That company still exists today. A lot of insurance companies. Radio slave was dead or alive, they cut you a check. And we signed up with these companies today. Are you kidding me? So, yeah. Tear it all down and build it back up. That's the only way you can rectify things like that, in my opinion. But until then, I'm going to continue my journey on being a sovereign citizen. Learning more about my Native American heritage and African heritage. My Native American gods. My Yoruba African gods. And just getting back to the root of who I am. And I cannot make this stuff. This stuff just comes to me. Spirit got me getting all these books and stuff. Like, okay, this whole time I haven't been searching Seminole or African. But the energies are energy, y'all. Because it's not just me. And when I look online, it's like a lot of people, we on the same wave. So I know I'm not alone. But I hope you guys took something from this episode. You know, always take what resonates with you and leave what doesn't. It's okay. Hopefully you learned something new. And I'll be back with another podcast episode soon. It's a new year, so I'm trying to balance and juggle a lot of things. But I also want to keep my podcast up as well. I want to tap back into, I remember I was saying I wanted to do an episode on The Sims and magical abilities like telepathy and different stuff like that, because we have gifts, y'all. We just don't know how to use them. And I'm going to be taking a Reiki class, and when I'm done with that, I'm going to be doing an episode on Reiki. I mean, there's so many books out there, you guys. You could just get books on anything and just read. And to me, I think what they don't tell us is when you read something, it opens a door. Like, your brain has unlimited information, right? But if it were to give it to you all right now, you would crash. Like, you can't handle it. So a lot of doors stay closed until you get keys to open them. When you get keys to open them, you have access to it to be able to open it. But if you never get those keys, that door, you won't even know the door exists, is what I'm trying to say. So a lot of these paths that I went down, veganism, you know, going to college, learning about how the government worked, all of my career paths, just like they're opening doors to, you know, that I didn't even know existed. And I'm able to dive deep and learn information. And I'm just trying to pass out keys, y'all. Sprinkle, sprinkle. Like, I'm not the type of person that will learn something and keep it to myself. Like, I am a share. I am a mouthpiece. Baby, this throat chakra be chakraing. But I just be having passion sometimes. And I don't mean it in a maybe evil or negative way. But it is what it is. Like, if you kill someone... At the end of the day, baby, you killed someone. You know, people can forgive you and they can move on, but it is what it is. You can't pretty that up. You know what I mean? It just is. So I will catch you guys on the next episode. Thank you for tuning in. I mean, there's so many podcasts out there and y'all are listening to this one. Spirit definitely guided you here. I think that's how everything works. Nothing is coincidental. So I hope you continue to join me for future episodes. And I will talk to you guys later. Bye. But ciao. Earth is ghetto. I'm trying to make this my last reincarnation here. So namaste, namaste, always a vibe. Hi, babe. Thanks a million for listening. I hope you have a better than great day. I love you. Talk to you later. Mwah. Bye.